Jonah cried out, 40 days more and Nineveh shall be overthrown. And the people of Nineveh believed God. They proclaimed a fast and everyone put on sackcloth. And on seeing what they did, God changed God's mind about bringing calamity. God did not do it. And they all lived happily ever after. If the book of Jonah was a simple moral tale, that's possibly how it would have finished. At the end of chapter 3, with everyone reconciled, everything resolved, with peace. But that's not how this story ends. In place of a simple denouement, we have this awkward extra chapter, full of provocation and irritation. Chapter 4, verse 1, and all this was bad to Jonah, very bad. And he was burning within himself. I knew it! I just knew it! He fumes. I knew this had happened right from the start. That's why I fled in the first place, why I didn't want to do this. I knew you'd end up showing mercy, withholding punishment. You're too compassionate, God, too gracious, that's your problem. You're far too kind to everyone. Damn it. Well, you know what, Yahweh, oh merciful one, I'm over it. Leave me alone, let me die. I'd rather be dead than live with this. That's a rough translation. He's not happy. He's not happy, and he's not afraid to show it. And if this story were to be performed, as Jeanette Matthews suggests it would have been, on a stage, as it were, then I can imagine Jonah shaking his arms in the air, clenched fists, and stomping off the stage at this point in a hissy fit. We'll look at God's response in a moment. But first, a couple of comments about this fizzing opening diatribe. Jonah is angry, and he lets God have it. And none too politely, I might add. Now this kind of language as prayer, prayer as quarrelling with God, can sound strange to us and risky. But in fact, it's a time-honoured biblical practice. Another expression of protest. Moses, Job, David, and St. Peter were all masters at it. Eugene Peterson once wrote. Mostly these giants of our tradition quarrel with God because God isn't doing what they want God to do. And so it is with our enraged prophet. Jonah is smouldering because in his reckoning, these Ninevites deserve punishment. In his judgment, they have been evil and violent. They believe and do all the wrong things. They've been bad to Israel, bad to God, and they deserve a thorough smiting. And what happens? He issues God's warning, and they repent, and God relents. Galling to Jonah, infuriating. There are 11 verses in this final chapter, and the word anger occurs 6 times. Now in the abstract, from the safety of a relatively unthreatened existence, Jonah's incensed reaction sounds kind of spiteful and unappealing. Though perhaps we'd view it differently if we were in, for example, Ukraine's current position, or the victim of abuse caused by someone who's now being shown mercy. One thing you can't fault, however, is Jonah's honesty. There is no pious pretense here. He is totally upfront about his thoughts and feelings, vengeful and ungracious as they are. And there's something to be said for this. Naming, praying our shadow side, our resentment, our malicious and vindictive thoughts, getting them out there and being honest. It's not pretty. But as with other forms of lament, it is a step, a first step at least, in the process of cleansing and release, and perhaps coming to a new mind. So how does Yahweh respond to our disgruntled prophet? Does he arc up and give Jonah a lecture about being ungrateful and hard-hearted, or threaten to smite him? No. Calmly, God responds, as God so often does to obstinate earthlings, with a question. Adam, where are you? Cain, where is your brother? Peter, do you love me? Jonah, is it good for you to burn? Or perhaps better, is your burning anger leading to anything worthwhile? It's a good question. And it does what good questions always do, which is to invite contemplation, a turn to wonder. God isn't defensive or self-justifying, nor does God condemn or deny Jonah's state. Rather, God acknowledges the anger and invites reflection. Jonah, what's this anger suggesting? What's it doing to you? And where is it leading? When anger erupts in us, it's a signal that something is amiss, out of alignment, blocked or broken. Anger is our sixth sense for sniffing out wrong in the neighbourhood, Eugene Peterson suggests. Diagnostically, it is virtually infallible. Anger is a signal that something isn't right, that there is evil or incompetence or stupidity or selfishness lurking about. God's response is to invite Jonah to attend to his anger. Well, at this point, Jonah is unwilling to accept God's offer. He doesn't even bother to speak. He just storms out of town, where it says, he sat down east of the city and made a booth for himself and sat under it in the shade, waiting to see what would become of the city. Stubbornly wishing, one suspects, that God might still decide to smite them. But that's not going to happen. God and Nineveh have settled accounts. It's with Jonah that things are unreconciled. And with the human struggle to accept God's anarchic mercy that the story contends. God's response is to give Jonah some space and some TLC. He appoints a fast-growing and apparently leafy plant to shade and succour the overheated prophet. And Jonah rejoiced over the plant with great rejoicing. That's more like it. That's what I'm talking about, Yahweh, you know. Sits back in his deck chair with his pina colada, I'm not sure. But anyway. But the next day, ever helpful, God sends the very hungry caterpillar who eats through a cupcake, a pickle, a piece of watermelon, and just kidding. He sends a worm who eats the plant, causing it to wilt. Now, picturing this rather humorous scene, humorous if it's not happening to you, I mean, I'm reminded of the saying that God comes to us cleverly disguised as our life. That's what appears to be happening here. God working with, in, and through the prevailing circumstances of Jonah's life. And it happened, we read, at the rising of the sun that God appointed a scorching east wind. And the sun smited the head of Jonah, and he became faint and wished for his breath to die. And he said, better is my death than life. Not happy. At which point, God asks again, is it good for you to burn over the ... plant? In the Hebrew, the word is untranslatable, and perhaps that's just as well in this story. Is it good for you to burn over the plant? Which perhaps Jonah replies to, or does reply to, caustically, It is good for me to burn until death. When we are angry, we know we are sitting on, we are sitting on something that matters, Peterson writes. Jonah is so angry, he wants to die. Clearly something is amiss. Something is out of alignment. Something important. But what is it? What's the real issue here? And where is it located? What our anger fails to do, Peterson added, is to tell us whether the wrong is outside or inside. We usually begin assuming that the wrong is outside of us. Our spouse, a parent, child, a friend, colleague, or God has done something offensive or has not done something we hoped for or expected. And we are disappointed. We are hurt. We are angry. And it's important to acknowledge and honour our experience. But if we track the anger carefully, we may also find it leads to a wrong within us. Wrong information, inadequate understanding, an underdeveloped heart. If we can also acknowledge and bear with the pain of this, get down off our high horse, which is another way of saying humble ourselves, that's when we can be pulled out of our quarrel and into the larger life of God. A life marked by reconciliation and release. Our heart grows larger, and with it, our capacity to embody the love of God in the world. So what of Jonah? Consumed with rage, angry enough to die. We all know and have probably experienced that feeling. Avoided or indulged, we've discovered, I imagine, that anger is inevitably debilitating. We become its prisoner. Someone has hurt or disappointed us or just won't give us what we want, but we're the ones who end up suffering. Jonah is being kept hostage by his own anger. He's trapped in resentment and bitterness. He will not be conciliated. Well, in the story, God makes yet one more attempt to reason with him, to draw him out of his cell and into a more spacious, gracious place. Jonah, Jonah, you are concerned about the plant for which you did not labour and which you did not grow. It came into being in a night and perished in a night. And should I not be concerned about Nineveh, that great city in which there are more than 120,000 persons who do not know their right hand from their left, and also many animals? It's another question. A tender expression of God's compassion. And that's where the story leaves us. At this point, words cease. And we, the audience, are left simply present to this tenderness, this mercy, this compassion. As for Jonah, well, did this troubled prophet ever come to terms with God's kindness and compassion for all the people, all the animals, all the earth? Did he accept the invitation to attend his resistance and surrender his wounds? Or did he continue in bitter defiance, stubbornly smouldering on, stewing in resentment? Learning to live without our prejudices and protective reactions can feel like hell, writes Rowan Williams. But the real hell is never to be able to rest from the labours of self-defence. Jonah. Jonah, is it good for you to burn? Is your anger leading to anything worthwhile? Why not look at it? Look into it. And let it lead you into deeper truth, a bigger heart, a more spacious life. Jonah, this burden is wearying to you. Come, let us look at it together. Come to me, and you will find rest for your soul. Come, will you come?